Blog Talk Radio.
Let's play. Let's play. What kind of girl? A little mystique. And you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my wall.
Hello, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I'm excited tonight. We are going to have fun. And that's why I started it with Amelia Bloom's Let's Play Radio. She is the 13-year-old singing sensation from Australia that was recently on our show. 13 years old. She wrote the song, she sang it, and she's just so full of life, and so is our guest tonight. Whoa, I can't wait to bring him on, and I'm going to do that in just a minute. I'm going to bring on Swami Beyondananda. And I just want to tell you quickly that next week we are going to have Dr. Michio Kaku, who is a theoretical physicist. Whew, hope I say all that right. And so we will be discussing his latest book, which has been on the bestseller list of New York bestseller list for 5 weeks. So all of you theoretical physicists or scientist wannabes or people that know about Dr. Kaku, do tune in. And that's going to be on Friday at noon. And I would also like to say hello to Blog Talk Radio. And thank you for making this possible. Without Blog Talk, I wouldn't be here. Swami wouldn't be here. So we're just really glad that we're all here. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and bring up Swami. And I want you all to welcome him. Swami Beyondananda has performed as the Cosmic Comic for the past 18 years. He is known for his inadvertently uplifting comedy. And one of the things that I wrote in the description, which I got off his website, which is called www.wakeuplaughing.com. www.wakeuplaughing.com. One of the things he says is that laugh loudly. Ejaculation is a natural bodily function. I hope I pronounced that right. and Feel No Shame. And that is condensed. So if you want to read the full thing, go to www.wakeuplaughing.com. He's also an internationally known author. And if you looked on our description page, you can see that I brought up three of his books from Amazon.com. And one of them is called Driving Your Own Karma. The next one is called Duck Soup for the Soul and Swami for President. And the covers are so much fun. You've got to go check it out and look for them on Amazon.com as well. So let me go ahead and say hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
What a great introduction. I didn't recognize myself.
Oh, I probably messed up some of the enunciation.
No, I like your pronunciation because it added a different dimension. It you know, ejoculation, having joy in it. It could be called ejoculation, which is the release of laughter that has been inside the body, needs to get out and escape and entertain other people. You know, laughing is contagious, you know.
Oh, it is. It really
yeah,
is. Just looking at the covers of your books make me giggle.
Well, that's good. That's the whole idea. Because, you know, the world is in kind of serious condition. And I think it's because of our serious conditioning to be serious, which is ridiculous because life is much too important to be taken seriously.
Much too important to be taken seriously. Swami, I should ask you right now, do you want to be called Swami or would you like to be called Steve?
Well, you know, through the magic, I'm a multiple personality. How about you?
Are you
one person or are you multiple?
I'm multiple.
Okay,
and you
that's
can
good.
Call
that
me
is...
Joy or Joyful or Blog Talk. I just, you know, I love Swami Beyonda Nanda.
I like the way you pronounce it. You make it two separate words, which makes it last longer.
Well, you pronounce it.
Well, it's an Italian name. It's Beyonda Nanda.
Beyonda Nanda.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. But, you know, I am two different people right now. Steve, who is the Clark Kent of the two of us, he is channeling Swami. And perhaps later on, if you have a specific question for him, I will channel him.
Oh, great. So do you actually have on your turban right now? I know you wear like a turban.
Well, yes, of course, because in order to access my wisdom, I must wear the turban because I am turban-powered.
Turban-powered.
Turban-powered, yes.
You
it's
also
the wave
have
of the, future.
The rug, the magic flying carpet.
That's right. And that is a great way to get around. And because I'll tell you something, but this is perfect for being on the radio because I am floating right now on my carpet. So literally and figuratively, I am on the air.
Very good, Swami. That's very, very good. I would love for you to tell us, Swami, what is your philosophy of life?
Well, you know, I heard you describing this other guy who's going to be on who is a philosophical physicist, a theoretical physicist, and
right.
I guess theoretically he's a physicist. But what is he actually? Have you ever wondered that? No, my philosophy is very, very simple. My philosophy is we are here to regrow the garden from the grassroots up and have a heaven of a time doing it. And I have a new non-religion. We have plenty of religions out there. I have a non-religion called fundamentalism with the accent on the fun, which is not to be confused with fundamentalism, accent on the mental. Because we believe that life is a joke, but the Creator is laughing with us, not at us. The Creator is watching the Comedy Channel, We're What's On.
Oh, okay.
You know that?
We
are given free choice in life. We get to decide whether or not we laugh. So if you want to be miserable, go right ahead. Whatever makes you happy.
Oh, whatever makes us happy.
Miserable makes somebody happy, why not? You know, but actually, I think that we are much better off laughing. Because, you know, you've heard that laughter is healing. You probably heard that, right?
Oh, I have.
Yes, and there was actually somebody, Norman Cousins, who was a writer, who was diagnosed with a life-threatening illness. And he checked into a hotel room with Marx Brothers movies and Candid Camera reruns, and he got well. And at that point, the medical establishment decided they are going to study the healing power of laughter, which is kind of like, well, it works in practice, but does it work in theory?
Right.
Yes. And they found that when we laugh, the body creates these hormones called endorphins, which are our natural painkillers. Yes?
Yeah.
So laughter is good for you. Believe it or not, it's good for you. And it's good for everybody around you.
Wow. I would agree with that. I don't hear a lot of people laughing.
Well, you know what? Maybe they're laughing on the inside. They say that the average child laughs 150 times a day, and the average adult laughs only 15 times a day. Now, if you go a day with... Yeah, isn't that terrible?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, if you go a day without laughing, you know what they call that?
No.
Irregular hilarity. I recommend a good laxative for everybody.
Okay.
And some of these adults, I'm telling you, they're so serious, they go a week without laughing, they end up suffering from humeroids. Yes, that's an enlargement of the onus, where you feel such a sense of responsibility that the only thing you're ever able to pass is heavy judgments.
Pass what? I'm sorry?
Heavy judgments. That's terrible.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. So it's good to laugh, and it's good to help other people laugh, particularly in these times that are challenging, you know?
A little challenging, huh, Swami? They are.
Yes, they are. They are. So this is important because laughter encourages us, and we need courage.
We do. We need courage. I want to let everyone know as well that if they would like to call in at any time, the number for the call-in is 347-326-9915. That's 347-326-9915. And if there is anyone listening that would like to talk on the chat room, I would love to know if you can hear everything okay. There's a little hand right by Swami's number on the switchboard, and I'm not quite sure what that is. Let me click on Live Help. But anyway, Swami, I would love to ask you, do you have a particular mission?
Well, you know what? My mission is to help this world wake up laughing and leave laughter in its wake. And I am starting something. You know, we have all of this fear-based Department of Homeland Security. I think we need heartland security because our true security is in the land of the heart, isn't it?
Yes, heartland security.
Yeah, people suffering from insecurity, the cure for that is inner security. And the way that we feel inner secure is that we recognize that we are all one with the same one, the universal oneness.
The universal oneness. And so
yeah, the universe has us surrounded. Might as well surrender.
That's right. It does have us surrounded.
Yeah. There's
surrender.
No place to go, I'm telling you. Here, we're in the universe. I'm sorry. That's all there is.
That's it. So
yeah, that's
why
all.
Are we fighting each other, Swami? What's all that about?
Well, you know what? I think that we are suffering from misperceptions. We have been subject to something that is I call the lowest common denominator. And that is where we have misinterpreted the golden rule and empowered the rule of gold. And instead of do unto others as you would have them do unto you, unfortunately, we have empowered people who say, do unto others before they can do unto you.
Uh-huh. I got it.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, so that is what we have empowered.
That's very wise. I like that. I would like you to repeat that, but I don't know if you can or want to, but...
Well, yes, I'll repeat it because I'm redundant. Did I say that I'm redundant? Yes, I'm redundant. Okay, I will repeat it. We have empowered, instead of empowering the golden rule, we have empowered the rule of gold, which is do unto others before they can do unto you. And that is what we call the lowest common denominator, because it is a belief that in order for me to win, you have to lose. But what science is telling us now, biological science and quantum physics is telling us that everything is connected. For example, give you an example. Each of us is a community of 50 trillion cells. 50 trillion cells in our body, and they all get along. That is the equivalent of 8,000 planet Earths full with people. Isn't that?
No.
The cells, they all get along with each other. And you know, inside the body, we have universal health care. We have full employment. We have no cell left behind.
No cell left behind.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
And you know, yeah, telling you, and the organs of the body, they don't fight with one another. You very rarely hear about the liver invading the pancreas, demanding the islets of Langerhans. You never hear about that.
No, you don't.
No, I'm telling you. So if we have to realize that just like how we are a community of 50 trillion cells underneath our skin, we have to realize that we are each and all cells in the body of humanity. We are all part of the same organism. That is the next level of human evolution, to realize that we are all connected and that when we share awareness, we are much more efficient. We don't spend our energy fighting one another. Imagine if your body was spending all of its energy fighting itself. What a waste of energy that would be.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
absolutely.
Autoimmune dysfunction.
And so our body gets along because it's not fighting.
That's right.
It just is.
So we have to be at least as smart as ourselves.
Well, I wonder why we're not.
Well, again, I think that we have been programmed and we have been limited in our programming, in our belief about ourselves. I'll give you an example. You know, when they train baby elephants, they tie them to a post, and of course the elephant pulls and pulls and pulls and pulls and cannot untie themselves, cannot pull away the post, cannot uproot the post. And the elephant learns that no matter how hard it pulls on a rope, it will never be able to escape. Well, when the elephant gets much bigger and much stronger, they're capable of pulling out any size post. But because they believe that the rope is holding them and they are unable to pull the rope, they never try. They never try.
They never even try.
Never try. And so we have to ask ourselves, we human beings, how many things do we actually not even try because we believe that we can't do it? When in fact we have the strength, we have the intelligence, we have the intention, we have all the love that we need to do all these things, and yet we stay stuck in these habitual ways of behaving. And I would have to say that unfortunately there are too many people on the planet who are being operated by dead people, you know?
By dead people?
Dead people who lived a long time ago.
Oh.
Who came up with these ideas that may not even be relevant anymore, but we're still living by these ideas out of habit.
Out of habit, and it's like the elephant, and the elephant just doesn't even try.
The elephant doesn't even try, because he already knows for sure that he cannot budge the post. So I'm asking people, what do you know for sure that's true, that you know for sure that may not be true? I think that the great wave of the future is being able to face the unknown, because the future is unknown. And the best way to face the unknown is by not knowing.
By
I don't
not
know.
Knowing.
I'm
well,
ready for the unknown, yes.
And not being afraid. Well, how, you know, if we have enough people that are showing us, you know, get out and do it, and then maybe we'll all let go of our ropes and give it a go and you know, give it a try, right? Do we need some leaders that are not afraid and are not wanting to blow everybody up to show us how to do it?
Well, you know, I think that we are coming to the realization that we are the leaders we've been waiting for. That's it. Because we are it from the grassroots up. And the thing that we have, the most underutilized human resource on the planet, is the love in our hearts. Because you know what? We are not here to earn God's love. We are here to spend it.
Oh, that's beautiful. We are here to spend God's love, not earn it.
That's
and yet
right.
Everything,
we already have it.
We already have it.
Yeah, so we may as well spend it. I call this supply-side spirituality.
Absolutely.
We each bring the supply, yes?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Because you know, that's a beautiful thing to really know that we're here already loved and we're not really like the religions and all. They tell us that we have to earn it, we have to earn it, we have to earn it. But no, you're saying we don't.
That's right. We're already here, you know, and, you know, we're already safe. We don't have to be saved.
We're already saved.
We're already safe. We're surrounded by the universe. What could be safer than that?
Well, that's true. What about all the religions, Swami? Like, you know, even your name is Swami, and like the Hindu religions, and they all say that if you don't do it right, you're going to come back as a flea.
Well, do you believe in reincarnation?
You know, I'm not sure. What do you...
I'll tell you something. I actually believe in reincarnation because I think that God is a recycler.
Oh,
well,
you
do. We have perfectly good consciousness. Why not keep using it over and over again? And yes, it makes a lot of sense to me. And actually, you and I don't know if you remember any of your past lives.
No.
Do you?
No.
No. Well, I can tell you because I know we've been around. We actually sat at the feet of the Buddha. Is that coming back to you now?
Not yet.
Okay.
Give me a minute.
I'll tell you something.
Now,
don't be embarrassed about this, but every time the Buddha would sit to meditate, you would ask him a question, and they actually ended up naming a city after you. Budapest.
Budapest.
Budapest,
oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I can tell you, in the past life, you also ask people questions. So sometimes these patterns, they just keep repeating. So you're asking me questions now.
And
I find it very interesting questions. I don't feel bothered because I'm not trying to meditate.
No, you're not meditating. Well, that's a good thing to think about, that reincarnation is real and that we do come around. But I really don't want to think that I'm going to come back as a flea.
Well, you know what? You know, sometimes these things work out. I knew somebody who actually aspired to great wealth in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
He never made it. He came back as a pigeon. And finally, he was able to make a deposit on a BMW. You see?
Okay.
Fulfillment comes at last.
Oh, no, that's too much. Okay, well, now I get it. Very simple. Well, Swami, are you an evolutionist or a creationist?
Well, that's a good question. I am both an evolutionist and a creationist because I believe that we were created to evolve. Otherwise, Jesus would have said, now don't do a thing till I get back. You see, I think that the big transformation right now, it's time for children of God to become adults of God. Because, you know, we've left a pretty messy diaper over there, you know, on this planet. So I don't believe in changing the world. I don't think we need to change the world. There's a better way. I say, let's toilet train the world and we will never have to change it again.
Well, that sounds good to me.
That's right.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, yes.
If we toilet train the whole world, then there won't be any more waste or wars or any of that, right?
Well, you know, I think that, I think what we need is more balance. You know, again, nothing is absolutely perfect, but we could be more balanced. You know, in for example, the body politic. I have nothing against criminals, by the way. Nothing against criminals. I just don't want them running things. Yes?
Okay.
So I think that in balance, you know, just like the body has an immune system and keeps the, the toxins in balance if it's a healthy body, I think that the body politic can keep the sociopathogens in balance by cultivating health because, you know, the bad forces find it very difficult to live in healthy conditions. They have nothing to feed on.
Oh, and they just dissolve. Or
they
become healthy?
You know, a parasite can be starved to death if there's nothing for it to eat.
I got
but
it.
But a parasite, by nature, has to convince you to eat what it wants. So, for example, if you have these yeast things inside your body,
mm-hmm.
you get these cravings for sugar, not because you need the sugar, but because the parasite needs the sugar.
Oh, okay.
So when we have parasites in our body politic, they are the ones convincing us that we need things that we don't really need. They're the ones that need the wars. We don't need the wars.
Oh, it's the parasites that need it, not us.
That's right. That's right. Because most human beings left, you know, through the power of the heart, most human beings who are not sociopaths, about 93% of us, actually believe in some version of the golden rule. They understand that life works best when we treat others the way we want to be treated. Now, you can call it love thy neighbor, or you can call it the law of karma, but it's the same thing. It's all about the consequences. Actions have consequences. And if we decide that we are not going to pay attention to the consequences, well, you know what? You can get rear-ended by your own karma.
Mm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Swami, what if somebody, though, their idea of love your neighbor as yourself is not quite what you and I think it is? You know,
that's a very good point. That's a very good point. I think that generally what that means is that you treat people the way that you would choose to be treated. Now, of course, there are qualifications. For example, if you're a sadist, does that mean that you'd be kind to masochists?
That's the question.
That is a very heavy question.
That's a heavy question.
Because if a masochist wants to be hurt and you refuse to hurt them, then
are you being,
you're hurting them by not hurting them, are you not?
It gets really too complex.
It gets very complex.
Do you make predictions?
Well, I have to tell you something. Well, first of all, I am writing a book on 2012. Did you know that?
Oh, no.
It's called 2012, The Secrets Revealed.
Oh.
And it's due to be published in 2013.
That's not good.
Yeah, you know, I want to be accurate.
That's one way to do it.
I'm telling you, my past predictions are 100% accurate because I only predict the past.
You're the first one that's going to write 2013.
That's exactly it. I want to be right.
You want to be right.
I want to be right. But you know what? I actually don't make predictions because I don't want to jeopardize my nonprofit status.
Oh.
And you know what? Where are you located, by the way?
Well, right now in San Francisco.
You're in San Francisco?
Yes.
No kidding.
And where are
you?
I'm
just right above you, right there in Sonoma County. But then you probably know that in California now, you can actually sue your psychic. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yes. Here's how it works.
All right.
If you're a sucker for a seer and what the seer sees sucks, you can redress your grievance in a seer sucker suit.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So you should know that if you're in San Francisco.
I should know that, especially.
Yes.
Because I was thinking now, I was looking at your schedule on the website, your website, and I thought you were in, why did I think you were in Colorado?
Well, I'm going to be in Colorado in, a week from, this coming weekend. A week from this coming weekend, I will be at something called the Snowmass Wellness Festival.
Okay.
And there may not be any snow massing there at this time of year.
No.
And then on Sunday, a week from, Sunday, I think it's the 17th, I will be at the Living Waters Unity Church in Arvada, Colorado.
Oh, okay.
And then, next month I'll be in Kalamazoo, Michigan. I'll be in Erie, Pennsylvania. Now that I woke up with the Erie feeling, and then look what happened. and then I'll also be at the Roe Conference Center in Massachusetts.
Oh.
So I'll be getting all over the place.
Wow. Well, Colorado is a beautiful place for you to go. Snowmass. Wow. That's beautiful. That's right by Aspen, I think.
That's right by Aspen. So I'll be going from Denver to Aspen, and it'll be great. I'm looking forward to being 8,000 feet up.
Yes.
I think that's what it is there in Snowmass.
Yeah, it's 8, way up.
8,000 feet.
And you are available for people to book you for different events. Is that
right? I've been booked, but never convicted.
Yes. So booking folks,
if they go, yes, if they go to wakeuplaughing.com, I am available for open. I travel anywhere.
Okay.
If, you know, people pay me. That is it.
And there you go.
By the way, I get paid, you know, and my pledge, of course, is that I spend every money, all the money that I spend will be, that I make will be spent in the economy.
Well, in every place.
Yes, so that is my pledge. Not everybody can say that.
All right.
they can do it, but they can't say it. I can say it.
You can say it.
I just
all right.
Did.
You can say it. Well, do you have, now I know you're working on a book actually right now, right, with another person? Is that right?
Well, my alter ego, Steve Behrman, who's a little bit more serious than I am, is working on a book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, and the book is called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and How to Get There from Here.
Wow, that sounds a little serious. Yeah, Steve must be quite a bit more... is it actually all about science and everything?
Well, it's about science, spirituality, politics, and economics. In fact, we narrowed the book down to the universe and beyond.
The universe
no, actually, and beyond. No, actually, it weaves together a lot of these ideas, and it really creates a new story based on the body as a metaphor for who we are. The body is a living metaphor for a successful community, and we can learn many things from the body. You know, and the body's economy, ecology and economy are one and the same, right?
Yes.
And in the politics of the body, there is a healthy central voice which balances out all of the forces and operates on truthful information, because if your body is not giving and receiving accurate information, it could be defending against the wrong things. So when we extrapolate that to the body politic, we see that we have to have truth. And that's great that you're doing working on Blog Talk Radio, that you're an alternative media, because I have to say something.
Right.
You know, the mainstream media,
mm-hmm.
it is the mainstream media is a brainwashing machine stuck on spin.
Oh. Yeah.
There's only one major TV news network that is actually telling the truth about what they're broadcasting.
Which one?
CBS. CBS. If you want a CBS, if you want a CBS, you came to the right place.
All right. So that one is...
You can see as much BS as you want on that station, and all of them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Blog Talk is a way to get your own voice out, and they're pretty open, pretty free, and you can say... just about you can say anything you want. You can have anything.
And we do. And so may I ask you that when you're not on the radio, what do you do? What do you do? Do you have a business? Do you have a mission, a ministry that you do?
Oh, you mean, well, you know, I do several different things. I actually am a painter, and I am a writer, and I have done some works around the world with different, you know, kind of causes or whatever. So I'm kind of a busy person in a lot of different areas. I'm very interested in sciences only because my older brother raised me and he was a scientist. So I'm always running after scientists, although I don't understand any of it.
Well, that's a good
genes.
Reason to keep running, you know. And so you were an experiment then.
Yes.
You got it.
Hey, maybe you're him. That's what I was, an experiment. That's it.
You are the experiment. Well, that sounds like a very, very unusual thing. And, of course, painting and radio go together, of course.
Well.
I mean, yeah. You know, actually, I think that we, and particularly for those people who are psychic, radio is perfect because they can see everything even if they're not looking.
That's right. It's the play of the mind on the radio. It's so much fun. To just like,
yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's great fun. So maybe somebody, you know, I've been on programs where people, you know, people called in, and I've been on other programs where people did not call in, and you know what we ended up doing?
No.
We ended up opening the phone book and calling out. We did call outs. If they're not going to call us, we're going to call them.
We're going to call them.
Yes.
Well,
just
yeah,
open the
that
phone
would
book
be
and...
something you could do from your end. I'm not able to do I'm on a switchboard, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not able to switch the lines like that.
Oh,
but
okay.
If you want to call somebody, we can listen to you call somebody. If you pick up another phone, don't call from this number, but if you have a cell phone, that would be kind of funny.
Okay, well, I only have one ear available, and the other ear is, of course, free to listen to something else. But no,
I just thought
if you had the capabilities, we would call out.
We would, and I would love to do that. That would be great fun, and I have several people that I would like to call right now, but I'm not able to do it on this switchboard.
Okay.
But
well,
maybe
then we will patiently wait.
Steve.
Hold on. Let me wait. Well, let me get him. I think he went to the bathroom. Hold on.
All right.
wait a minute. Hold on. I'm getting him.
Okay.
Hold on. Wait. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Steve? Hey there. Yeah.
Well, hi, Steve. How are you?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought I could leave the room while the Swami was on, but apparently not. I'm doing great.
Wow. And your last name is Behrman. Am I pronouncing
Behrman,
it right?
Behrman, like Smokey the Bear. It's Behrman. B-H-E-E-R.
Steve Behrman. And you are like Swami's brother?
Well, we occupy the same body. And, you know, multiple personalities we're finding is very efficient. If you think about it, you know, there's a lot of human beings on the planet.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, you know, we know we have a heavy footprint. And I was reading about a guy who has 10 personalities. I went, wow.
Woo.
10 personalities, that's efficiency, right?
Yeah.
If we had more people like that, we'd need fewer people.
That's right. That's right. Wow.
Of course, then you wonder, how does a guy end up with 10 personalities? I read the rest of the news article.
Mm-hmm.
They just arrested him for identity theft. So I guess that's how it happens. Yeah.
That's how it happened. Did he have 10 social security numbers?
I don't know. It was very difficult. But, you know, I think it's efficient. You know, you can, you know, be, you know, the multiple personality thing, that's very interesting because, seriously, I'm now talking seriously.
All right.
Just to let people know that people with the real multiple personality disorder, not just simply creating characters in your head, they actually change physiologically. Their eye color may change when they change from one personality to another. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
They might have allergies in one personality but not in the other.
No, I had no. Are you really sincere? Oh, my gosh. No, I didn't know.
No,
that.
I'm serious. I'm framing this as serious. And, in fact, the book that I'm writing with Bruce Lipton, the Spontaneous Evolution book,
uh-huh.
talks about that phenomenon, among other things. Because, we tend to, as the Swami said earlier, you know, we tend to be like those elephants that are tied to posts and not realizing that we're being tethered by beliefs that may not even be true. And so we tend to not recognize the extraordinary powers that we have. I mean, for example, you've heard these stories about a woman whose son is trapped under a car and she ends up lifting a 3,000-pound car to free her son. How'd she do that? Where did that energy and power come from? So we haven't studied any of that. We tend to, you know, for example, placebo effect, you know about that. That's, you know, a sugar pill that
mm-hmm.
you think you're getting a real medicine. 25 or 30% of the time, it works just as good as the medicine. Why don't we study how that happens?
Exactly. Why, it actually works. If people don't know what they're taking, it can cure a disease just like the actual pill. Is that true?
Because the belief is that something is working. There's a very interesting story about the placebo effect. In the early 1950s,
mm-hmm.
there was a young anesthesiologist in England, and he was working for a surgeon, and a patient came to the surgeon with warts all over his body, and the only thing that they figured they could do was to graft the skin from the parts of his body that didn't have the warts onto what did. And the anesthesiologist had been reading about hypnotherapy, and he said, you know, I read that this could be cured by hypnotherapy. And he says to the surgeon, why don't you try it? The surgeon says, why don't you try it? So the young anesthesiologist did a hypnotherapy session with the young man, and a few weeks later he comes back and his body is pretty much cleared of all these warts. And he brings him in to see the surgeon, and the surgeon's eyes get very big, and the surgeon says, this guy didn't have warts. He had this incurable elephantiasis disease where your whole body becomes encrusted, and finally it's a fatal illness. It's incurable. Nonetheless, thinking that it was warts, the anesthesiologist was able to cure him. Now, I saw an interview with the anesthesiologist about 50 years after that, and he said that he had kept in touch with the young man and that the man had gone on to have a family, live a normal life, still alive, and so on. And so people had heard that this anesthesiologist had been able to cure this incurable illness through hypnotherapy. And so they came to see him. But he was never again able to cure anyone.
Why?
Because he found out that it was incurable. And so he himself, the hypnotherapist, didn't have the belief necessary to do the cure. But he did it that one time. And it worked. So that's
Whoa.
How powerful the mind is, right?
I'll say, beyond what we ever could dream.
And
do
so
you,
what, yeah.
I'm sorry, Steve.
Yeah.
Do you feel that sometimes that we're being channeled, you know, by other spirits, or do you think the mind of each person is able to do these things individually?
Well, I think that's very interesting. I think that what we're learning, you know, again, in many traditions, you know, again, scientific materialism, which is the current dominant paradigm in our culture, tends to disbelieve and dismiss anything that is not visible or measurable. And yet, quantum physics has discovered that essentially, as Einstein said, the field is the sole governing part of the field is the sole governing factor over the particle. In other words, energy is what moves matter, not the other way around. And so we tend to dismiss the invisible fields and so on. But there's an interesting experiment that was done several years ago by Rupert Sheldrake, and it was called, he wrote a book about it called Dogs Who Know When Their Owners Are Coming Home. Now, maybe you've had a dog and maybe you've experienced this, but he actually did an experiment. He had a woman that he knew in England who had a little dog, and they took a camera, and they put the camera with a time code on the dog in her apartment. She went out, and there's a camera on her, and as part of the experiment, at some point, unbeknownst to anybody, including the dog, she gets a call on her cell phone saying, go home. As soon as she receives this call, instantaneously, you see the dog run to the door.
Oh, my God.
So dogs are able to perceive these things not at the speed of light, but at the speed of thought. Now, I know that you perhaps, and maybe people listening, have had the experience of intuitively and instantly knowing when somebody is going to call, or knowing that a loved one thousands of miles away is having a difficulty.
Right. Absolutely.
So how does that happen?
I mean, that's
the big question. How does it happen? But because science does not believe that these things can happen, it chooses not to study how they do happen. And I think the next level of inquiry is about how these things take place, and we begin to acknowledge the power of the invisible in our lives, then that power, we come much closer to being able to use that power.
Once we start, we had a guest, Christopher Moon, talking about the telephone to the dead, that evidently Thomas Edison was developing before he passed on, the inventor of the light bulb, And he claims this telephone. There's an actual physical telephone that you can call, you know, people on the other side. He said some people can use it. It's kind of a big, bulky-looking thing, but some can't. And what you're saying, I'm just wondering, could it be that the people that believe that it works and the others maybe not?
Well, that's interesting. I never heard of that, but that's an interesting idea. I wonder who pays for those calls. Can you put it on your Ascended MasterCard and pay for it next lifetime, I'm wondering?
I don't know. Well, he says he talks
what
to...
What a bill. Oh, my God. It's from lifetimes ago.
Huh?
But, you know, I think that's a great idea. I think that there are people that we've, you know, there are people out there who are a little bit closer to having that phone line to these phenomena in other worlds. But a beginning is to begin to entertain the possibility that these worlds exist and these means of communication exist. You know,
and you feel that scientists will start our next level of development, that they will start studying this more?
Well, I think what's happening right now is that conventional science still believes in what we call scientific materialism, that only matter matters. If it's not, if you can't put your hand on it, it doesn't exist. Scientific materialism believes in survival of the fittest. That's not really true. It's really thrival of the fittingest. Scientific materialism believes that evolution is a random process, and it turns out that evolution is a participatory conscious process. And, you know, quantum physicists are discovering that when you get down to the smallest particle that there is, there's no there. It's all energy. It's the subatomic world is a vortex of energy that is moving so quickly that you can't put your hands through it, that it feels solid. For example, you know, a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
When you see, quote unquote, a tornado, what you're not really seeing the tornado. What you're seeing is the debris swirling around that the invisible winds are blowing. So you can't put your hand through a table for the same reason that you can't drive your car through a tornado. The energy field is so powerful that it repels anything trying to pass through it.
Mm.
So what we call solid matter is really rapidly vibrating energy.
Hmm. It's just vibrating.
So we don't really exist. We're actually, you know, we. It's really funny. Perhaps it's more like the old transistor radios, you know, where, you know, you're at the beach and you're listening to a radio station and you run out of batteries. And the transistor radio doesn't play.
Right.
Well, you got to ask yourself, while the transistor radio is not playing, is the radio station still broadcasting? You put new batteries in, that is, you reincarnate, you put new batteries in, you reincarnate the system, and lo and behold, you're receiving the broadcast once again. Broadcast has always been broadcasting.
It's never stopping.
Never stopping. So maybe that's what reincarnation is. Maybe that there's a broadcast. Maybe we're actually being broadcast. We're actually the result of some broadcast happening somewhere.
That could be. Whoa.
These are questions for inquiry. And, you know, once you step outside the lines of normal conventional reality, once you step outside the matrix, there's a lot of things that are possible. And we start to realize that that existence is a lot more than we imagine it is. You know, we're very much stuck in thinking that existence is physical. But
that's
there
true.
Are people all over the world who, in other traditions, who are able to access other realities. We probably could too, but we've kind of gotten out of the habit.
Oh, God, we forgot. I mean, somebody like Leonardo da Vinci, that he was inventing or drawing the helicopter before we ever even, obviously, years before. Now, was he just in another, was he just able to see better or tune in better? Or
Well, you know, a lot of, if you look at some of these predictions by Nostradamus and so on, I think that what we are, there have been some very interesting experiments. There's a book, I'm trying to remember the name of the book. It's by Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N. He works with the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Uh-huh.
And he has some fascinating experiments about time, etc. Apparently, there are what they call random number generators. They're simply computers that just kind of spit numbers out in a random pattern. But
okay.
Sometimes, when conditions change on the planet, when a lot of people are thinking about the same thing at the same time, the number patterns begin to develop coherence. They begin to form very specific patterns. And interestingly, the three times in recent years in our lifetime that the numbers, they've been doing this since the early 1990s, the three times in the last 10 or 15 years that the numbers became coherent, that to show essentially that people were thinking about the same thing at the same time. First was during the O.J. Simpson trial. Second was the funeral of Princess Diana. And third was the 9/11 attacks. Now, what's interesting about 9/11, if you can imagine a chart, you know those bell-shaped curves that you remember from school?
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's a pinpoint of activity right at the middle of the bell-shaped curve. Consider that 2 hours or 3 hours before the 9/11 attacks, the numbers began to get more coherent. In other words, in anticipation of this event that had not yet happened, our consciousness was moving into this sense of coherence. Isn't that interesting?
That's amazing. Before it ever even happened, we were all moving into this.
Yeah, now maybe you've wondered or your listeners have wondered, how is it that animals know when an earthquake is going to take place? Probably a lot for the same reason. That there's something that they're tuned into that's, I would call it a, you know, reverberation. I would call it a preverberation.
Oh, okay.
A preverberation of something that hasn't happened yet.
Preverberation. And what about the O.J. Simpson trial? You mentioned that kind of startled me.
Well,
how,
you know, a lot
that?
Of people were watching it at the same time. It happens every year at the Super Bowl. A lot of, when people are concentrating and focused on the same
idea or place,
then these numbers somehow come to coherence.
Okay, that is amazing. These
yeah.
are the kind of things. Well, I want to make sure and ask you a couple of more things so that our time doesn't end. Before that happens, you have another transformational project set to launch that you
That's
mentioned.
Right.
Yeah, I would love for you to talk to everyone about that. That combines spirituality, personal growth, sustainable economics, and politics?
Yes. And interestingly, my background is in political science, which I know sounds like an oxymoron to some people. But I've been really curious about politics for many, many years. And having gone through, you know, learned about spirituality and psychology, etc., for the past several years, I've been cooking this idea. And, you know, we have right now a fear-based Department of Homeland Security. And it sounds vaguely like Big Brother and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need a Department of Heartland Security because our only security is in the land of the heart. So this September 11th, this upcoming September 11th, I will be publishing a online multimedia ebook called Heartland Security, A Humanifesto for a New World. And this weaves together spirituality, economics, politics into a coherent story to help us mobilize the positive energy that we have to allow the caterpillar organism that's falling apart right now, to allow it to fall apart and to build the butterfly flying machine that we will need to take us to the next evolutionary level. And so this is it's an ebook, and it's also a portal website which will be able to weave together the really good things happening in the domain of the heart, of love and connection and coherent meditations and so on. Land, which represents sustainable economics for the thrival of all and to regrow the garden. And security, which means treating one another with respect, following the golden rule, et cetera, which we call the one suggestion. Maybe the Ten Commandments were too many. Maybe one suggestion.
And this ebook, will that be available on your website?
If you go to if you send me a note at info@wakeuplaughing.com, I will send you information on Heartland Security, how you can get involved. And we will be launching next month. So we don't have a website up yet, but that's coming.
That's coming. And you can reach you through, I'm sorry, give your email. It's info@wakeuplaughing.com.
Correct.
Right. Okay, that sounds good. And this is kind of backtracking, but I would love to know, to share with everyone, what, how did you get started doing comedy, by the way? I mean, just what was it? Have you always been able to make people laugh, or did it just,
Well, you know, I'm actually here because of a joke. I'm actually here on the planet because of a joke. Seriously. During World War II, my dad was in the Army.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of a jokester, too, and he was home on leave.
Okay.
And somebody, he said something, and somebody said, oh, you just put your foot in your mouth. So my dad actually physically tried to put his foot in his mouth, except that he ended up dislocating his hip. And he was laid up at Fort Hamilton Hospital. And while he was gone, his entire outfit shipped out to the Battle of the Bulge and nobody came back. So I'm here because of a joke.
Oh, my God.
So
what
I take
story.
It serious. Yeah, I take it seriously. And then when I was a kid, I was the kid who, you know, I would make everybody laugh and then the teacher would give me a zero.
Uh-huh.
And you know that you're that kid. You know that you're meant to do comedy. The first time that you make somebody laugh so hard at lunch that milk comes out of their nose. That's the sign. That's the universal sign. Yeah. You are chosen, you know. And so I had serious careers. I taught high school. I taught at my own alternative high school. I taught at Wayne State University. I was a freelance writer. I wrote books for other people.
Wow.
And about 20 years ago, I decided that I was going to begin doing comedy as a full-time career.
And you've been doing it ever
since? Mystery. Yeah.
And you love it.
What's not to love about making people laugh or knowing that they're going to laugh? You know, you get out there and you know that they're going to laugh. They don't know it yet. They suspect that maybe they're going to laugh.
They suspect.
But they don't know it for sure until you actually make them laugh. And we need, you know, again, seriously, it's not just the physical release of laughter, but laughter actually creates courage, and we need courage right now to face some of the darkness that we have not been willing to face about our own government, our own country, et cetera, et cetera. And humor is one of the things that lets us reminds us that we're bigger than our situation.
I never thought of that. Making you laugh gives you courage. Huh.
I'll give you an example.
Wow. It's more important than it. Because I know it, you know, that it heals. Now, I'm not sure exactly how it heals. Is that how it heals, by making us have
Well, I think that there's a number of different ways. I mean, you know, on a physical level, laughter causes breathing, and, you know, breathing is the key to long life, right? The secret to living a long time, keep breathing. So breathing is the key to long life. So laughter causes breathing. But on another level, on a spiritual level, it gives us perspective. One of my favorite true stories about the power of humor to transform something that happened in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis, which is the closest we've come to blowing ourselves up. And at the time of the missile crisis, there were American and Soviet delegates who were meeting something totally separate. They were meeting to discuss possible trade between the two countries. And when news of the missile crisis hit, everything stopped, and there was tremendous tension in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, one of the Soviet delegates raised his hand and said, "I suggest we each go around and tell a joke," and he volunteered to start. His joke was, "What's the difference between capitalism and communism? In capitalism, man exploits man. In communism, it's the other way around."
Mm.
And everybody laughed because it was a joke on both of the systems, you know, people were able to continue their business. So I think that sometimes, because humor brings together two things that don't belong, that don't relate, it actually makes us more intelligent because it resembles the interplay between the left and right hemisphere, the intellect and the intuition.
Huh. Brains of left and right. Yeah, I mean, it's like what I read in the description, and you said it was ejaculate.
As in a joke.
Yeah. I put that in, and I was wondering perhaps if I would have. but I love that. I think that's real. You know, I really have enjoyed this, and I know that we have listeners. I can see them, but I don't see them on the switchboard, which doesn't mean they didn't try to call in. There's a funny little figure up here, but evidently they can hear because I can see them right here. I just can't bring them up. But would you come back sometime?
I will come back. I will reincarnate to somebody else or myself, and I will come back.
Oh, Swami, thank you. And everyone out there, if you want to get in touch with Swami or Steve, please go to www.wakeuplaughing.com. I really, really have enjoyed this, and thank you so much. I had the most beautiful response to having you on this show. People love you. So
well, thank you.
They love you. Thank you
thank
so
you
much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And may the fart...
Oops. I'm sorry. Hello?
May
I'm sorry.
May the fart
what?
Be with you.
Oh, may the fart be with you?
Yes.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Swami.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's play. I'm the kind of girl, a little mystique, and you're the only one I've ever met who can't handle it. You climb my wall, you jam my door. I think you might be just the kind of boy I've been waiting for. I wanna get you out on the floor and dance until my feet are numb. And when you get close, it's like rubber in my bones. And by the look in your eyes, you're melting down into the danger zone. Hey, hey, people say you're wild and unpredictable. I wanna play.
Saturday dance. Heard they crowded the floor. Awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore. Thought I'd go to the club.
I just want to tell everyone good night, and I really enjoyed Swami. Isn't he wonderful? I hope everyone at Blog Talk gets in touch with him to be a guest. He's just a brilliant man, and I cannot say enough how much I enjoyed having him tonight. And I wanted to tell you that Amelia Bloom, 13-year-old singing sensation, was singing, and then I jumped in with someone that I simply love. Her name is Diva Jazzy Joan Cartwright, and that I let you hear a little bit of is called Don't Get Around Much Anymore, and check her out. She has her own show on Blog Talk, Music Woman, and she's just wonderful, and you can find her on the internet, Google her, Joan Cartwright. And again, I must say, Swami Biyandananda, Steve Berriman, just beautiful. And I love you all. Thank you so much. Good night.